All right, welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. A beautiful afternoon in right outside of Hartford, Connecticut, which I wish I could say is as beautiful a place. Talking with Alex Pettit, Estelle, who is, if you could see, he's sitting in this wonderful environment with all kinds of essential oils burning in the background because he works at a manufacturer of cosmetics and essential oils and things like this. Who knows how AI gets involved in any of that? You are the IT director. And well, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. I would love to know how you got started in IT, because as of recent, many people have been saying, Phil, you should just do an amalgamation or something. I think that is the correct word, of different IT directors and how they got into IT. Because I would say that 90 to 95% of the people that ever come on this show, when they grew up, they weren't saying, I'm going to be an IT director someday. They have all vast backgrounds of things. And someone was like, hey, you know, you're pretty good with technology and you fix the printer. You want to be the VP? So how did it happen?
It's kind of sad, but it's somewhat like that. I went to school for bioengineering initially. So when I graduated, I was working in protein engineering. We were doing cancer research and cardiovascular engineering. Okay. And I was the dude on my lab where I'd go in and fix equipment, or if we had a broken computer, I would go over and fix that or build new equipment for us. I had my own research I was working on at that time as well. Then COVID hit, was seeing a girl, and she was like, oh, come down to Utah where I'm at. Because I was laid off, and ended up coming to Utah and started working for Dynamic Blending. And I started in their QA department, the QA shop floor.
What do you guys do there?
So Dynamic Blending, we're a turnkey manufacturer. We'll do everything from OTCs to CBD, as you said, essential oils. We've got balms, creams, toothpaste. If it gets put in a tube or a bottle, we can do it. We're getting into powders now too for some drink supplements. It's a whole gambit.
So you guys could make my own, if I wanted to, could you make my own fragrance?
Yeah, we could. You could show up and we can take you from R&D, marketing, get you your certs, whether you want your fragrance to be certified organic or anything along those lines, to formulating it, putting it in bottles and shipping out your first run for you.
We should do that. We should do we would do like an information technology nerds fragrance. And we would call it, I don't know, what would we call it? I don't know. We need something that's like really, I don't know.
Artificially rosy?
I don't know. I'm going to think of that. The correct word is going to come to me for this fragrance, but I'm thinking we're going to need a lot of male models. This fragrance is going to have to, it's going to have to be wrapped up in like some kind of felt silk box. It's going to have to be brought out onto a stage on like some kind of stretcher with poles being brought out by all the male models, chained up with chains around it. And we're going to have to do like a huge, massive IT nerds reveal of this fragrance. And everyone is all 600 people that listen to the show are going to want it. Okay. So that's cool. So you were in R&D, or what was it again? Quality assurance, quality. I'm screwing this up. What were you doing that someone was like, you know what? You're in the wrong department. We need to put you in charge of all the computers or something.
I was in QA, and from there it was just kind of a work my way up. They're like, hey, yeah, want to take over IT for us, and start doing more and more with them. And just kind of looked at, hey, where could we save costs? Where can we make stuff better? And that was like, oh, well, let's go build a server. That's going to speed up things. And, you know, why not just build a couple of servers? And then there's other things that I've done that were responses, like LinkedIn. I'm forgetting the name. They were the password company that got hacked a while,
LastPass?
LastPass, thank you. The one with the elf.
LastPass. Yeah, we all use them. They got hacked. No. But yes, keep going.
But, you know, going over and looking at LastPass, and
Sometimes ignorance is bliss. Coming into like a new role like that. So, and I think it can be revealing for people that might want to get into IT, people that are already in IT, maybe they haven't thought of it in a while. Maybe it's like, let's get back to some of the things that we used to do. How did you go about looking at things? So, you know, sometimes you come in, you take over a role and you're like, oh, wow, this place is a mess. Where do I begin? You know, or wow, there's just, and I don't mean it like a mess. I mean like, wow, there's so much opportunity here. What was some of the low hanging fruit or the quick wins? Because I think any time for an IT person to do well or look good, at least look good, is like, hey, let's just get some quick wins.
I'd say looking at contracts that we had with people where it's just like, we can just go do it ourselves. I mean, a big one was all of our security cameras. You know, mm-hmm. we moved into a new building and it cost the company $10,000 to get it wired versus, mm-hmm. you know, kind of looking at it. So your camera's a Cat 5 cable and then you're just plugging it into your MVR. From there, you just got to set the MVR to talk to it mm-hmm. and give it a static IP if you're using switches to get it across the building. Because, you know, sometimes you need more than 300 feet
yes. to get to that.
So,
And you are paying a vendor for that. I'm assuming you are paying a vendor some massive monthly cost.
Monthly costs, to come in, do maintenance, fix all that stuff. And it's like, nah, let's just do that ourselves. Or just comparing email services, seeing what we need on those versus, you know, how hard would it be for me to learn some quick HTML to get taglines on so we could drop our signature and automate that away.
Mm. How hard was that to learn?
Honestly, not that hard. There are sites out there that will help you do at least the basic layout of all of it. And then from there, it's
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT is great for coding. I'm actually, before we were talking, I'm currently building a app for the company that just does everything from our fill volumes to keep it FDA to pack out validations for, you know, box sizes to pricing and costing.
That sounds kind of crazy. So, you know, for being somewhat, you've led me to believe that you're kind of like green in IT, but you're saying things that are not green. You're saying things that are, and again, maybe this is the ignorance is bliss thing. You're saying things that make a lot of sense. Like, how do we use technology to make more money, be more efficient and make more money and be more efficient and cut costs. I think that's kind of what IT should be doing.
I would completely agree. Okay. But one caveat, make things user-friendly because you can put out stuff that's really
Yes. Help other people do their job better. Yes. End user training. And okay. So what do you see? What wasn't user-friendly? Lotus Notes or something? I mean, what was it?
Half the stuff I made first started, I came from an academia environment and engineers where it's like, hey, it's a bunch of engineers. Stuff is
like simple. Common sense. Some stuff is common sense. Okay.
And then it's like, wait, nah, I got to make it so that people who've never really liked math get things or passwords make sense. And it's so easy that they can use it. So when evaluating systems, like finding a system that I may think is cool.
Please share something that was like so ridiculously easy that you made so easy.
I mean, a big one. So when we shifted password managers, we've jumped over and we're using Vault Warden right now. So it's a container you can download, runs on the back. It's Bitwarden's free if you can host it.
Uh-huh.
So that is simple enough. You make a random password, Control-Shift-9 generates a password. Just Control-V, save in your folder. And that is about as simple as it can. When it first rolled out, sat down with at least all the big wigs in the company and all of the departments around the community. Like, okay, we're going to change your hotkeys around and everything to get this as easy as possible so people can use it.
And did they say go to hell?
I got about a 50% success rate. It's got some great admin tools.
We got to give him a chance. Give him a chance. This is his first thing. Give him a chance. Okay, so anyways. And
it's something now that's been great for us. It's gone over. We've got password generated. It's made password sharing easy, organized. That was an issue we had with LastPass is we didn't have organization in it versus this were able to do quite a bit of nesting folders, which always bugged me. I couldn't do that on our last pass. And so it's all kind of worked out fairly well. And it's still working on the increased usage stuff.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
This is like coming in. This is like second nature to you. This is actually quite eye-opening for me. I'll be honest with you. How long have you been in this role?
So title-wise, I've had this for about 6 months. Role-wise, whereas doing what I'm currently doing, about two and a half years.
Are recruiters looking for IT directors in the wrong area? Should we be going to research analysts and like weird biopharmaceutical engineer guys to turn them into IT directors? Because you seem to have taken over pretty well.
No, I think there's...
I used to tell sales recruiters, you need to go recruit people from coffee shops. Just go to Starbucks to recruit your people because they talk with everyone all day long. They should be the people you go recruit from.
Huh. I like that.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, no, I don't think... I think you definitely could find talent there. It kind of depends on what the person was doing there, what the person's interests were. I was kind of on a more technical side. A lot of what our labs were working on was protein engineering. So we're sequencing column chromatography and doing things along those lines, where if you pulled someone who's got that chemical background in, there would be...
That sounds super nerdy. Can you give me an example of something super nerdy that was, you know, protein engineering? Like, what's the most common thing that everyone that would be like, oh yeah, that, like, what is protein engineering? Like, what would I know that has been made recently that I need to know about?
It's been made recently.
I mean, just what is it? Like, why would you want to be in protein engineering?
Well, so proteins are kind of the easy way to say them are like the building or Legos of humans. So right. They're what make up cells. They go over, come together. Proteins are, if you're looking for things like it's damaged in cells, things along those lines, where you want to initially address, because, you know, if you take in a design aspect, you know, if you've got a motor that's supposed to have six cylinders firing and one of the cylinders breaks, you just would swap out the cylinder. Proteins are kind of in the same way, that if you can go over and make the cell itself swap out that cylinder, you're going to fix it. CRISPR, which it's a pretty big one. Everyone's kind of heard of it, where it's going over and doing DNA or RNA swap outs in cells, hard cuts. That's to generate proteins. So the protein then leads form to function. What we were specifically looking at was the troponin C complex, which is what lets your muscle, well, it's what lets your heart contract. Troponin in general lets your muscles contract. But the thing with that complex is that if you have a heart attack, stroke, anything along those lines, that is what gets damaged. That's what leads people to need heart transplants, heart valve replacements. All of those are generally due to your troponin C complex. It's actually one of the tests that if you go into a hospital, they'll check your troponin C levels in your blood. And there's three proteins within that complex, but they'll check and go over and be like, oh, hey, you know, you've gone and had a heart attack. Let's go over and take you and put you on antibiotics for it. And on the antibiotics, but let's put you on an EKG and, you know, let's monitor and see if we need to do anything more invasive. So what we were looking at is, in a sense, building a protein that could come in, sit on top of that broken complex and still allow movement. So instead of, you know, heart transplanted, it's like, well, hey, let's give you a shot.
That would be great. Yeah, in case, right? Instead of a hip replacement, it'd be great if you could regrow my cartilage too. I'm still waiting for that one.
Cartilage is really fascinating.
If they could, let's talk about it. We don't have to talk about IT. I mean, you just happen to be an IT guy that knows about this stuff, but if they could do it, they'd probably kill the person that could regrow it. Maybe they've already been killed three times because they make so much money doing bionic hip replacements, whatever we want to call it, carbon on poly, whatever these different joints are, which is what I need. And I've been putting it off for a long time. And I'm just really kind of waiting for the day where they're like, oh, we figured out cartilage.
And there's currently research out there like 3D printers. I think they're one of the things that like everyone should get into, but like 3D printing cartilage is something that like it's been around. I remember going to symposiums on that. And one of the cool things with cartilage that they went over when their big results that they pulled out is you can 3D print the perfect lattice out for your cartilage and print it onto your lattice and have this like perfect replacement. Uh-huh. But if you don't subject that cartilage to the same stresses and same pressures that it would experience in its place, well, where it's going to be replaced in, it's anywhere from 50 to 75% worse at that time. So not just being able to produce the cartilage lattice, where after you get that lattice and you got your cartilage on it, you do need it to grow a little bit. And that's where you get into.
So we need something like that. We need like a machine to hit it with a hammer or something as it's growing or something crazy like this. Is that what we need? Put pressure on it or something?
And something to pull on it too. But yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Pull. Okay. Yeah. Also, the other thing I heard is that like the artificial cartilage is like very like not as smooth or something like that. It's like rough, or it's just not quite perfect or something like that.
Gets into more of the like you need to subject it to where it's the stress factors that it's under. It's kind of this weird thing where like the cells that are building out that cartilage aren't going to respond if you just give it like, hey, grow here. It needs to be under that same, and that helps smooth it out and let it know, oh no, that place isn't as great environment to be in because I need to be in here and I need to strengthen for this.
You know any test labs or I can go be a test bunny in or something like that, and they can just like practice on me, and that way maybe I don't need a hip replacement and I'll just come out like new?
None that are on human trials.
Darn it. All right. What do you do as a kid? I just need to know, how do you get involved in this technology stuff as a kid? Or like, did you play outside, or were you a video game guy or something? Because most kind of, I don't know, C-level CTO, CIOs, or anyone that gets to a certain age limit, we are all around when, you know, like the computers were like invented prior to the internet. So I'm assuming the internet was pretty much around, because you look fairly young, and I'm assuming the internet was around your entire life. Can you even imagine a time without the internet?
I remember dial up, and that was always kind of rough.
That counts. That definitely counts as not really being around, because what do you really do? Go to messaging boards or something? It's quite amazing. Even the thought of like Google and like the start of it is amazing. So yes, how'd you get into this thing? What was your first computer?
First computer is like a Windows 2001 family computer. Kind of hated it because I pretty much just used it to write papers. Didn't really start to get into computers playing Empire Earth and Heroes of Might and Magic 3 with the group of guys that I run around with, because that one had a hot seat.
So you could like, like a LAN party, or like actually online?
No, this is three dudes sitting in the same room waiting for the other person to take their turn.
Basically a LAN party, but with one computer. Now, hey, yeah, your turn, go. That's cool.
That was a lot of fun. I did stuff outside. I ski raced, I ran, I did a lot of biking.
Ski race, Utah or what? Where?
Washington. On Mount Hood.
Like slalom poles or that's slalom pretty serious. Poles,
GS.
Are the knees holding up? You got good knees and everything still?
They hurt a little bit when I go out and run, but don't run as much.
I used to run a lot. I don't run anymore. I basically figured out that was boring, and why am I running for 2 hours every day? And then I got into jiu-jitsu, and that was very addictive and took over my life. So running, skiing, excellent. What's the, you're too young to ask what the end game is. Do people think about the end game at your age in IT right now? What's the, any mentors, any IT mentors, anything like that? No, it just seems like you're one of, okay, go.
So we've got a company we do hosting out of, and then we pay for their, I get an assistant to come in from them to help me out with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So their owner has been just a great help with kind of being like, hey, well, look at this. Go check this out. His name's Chris, works our own system networks out of Utah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, he's been a great help for me to be, he'll give me direction so I can then pursue that direction. Or if I'm really, really lost, he'll sometimes be like, hey, you know, check out this, or this is where I go to get information.
Where does he go to get information? I need to know. We need to provide some value here somehow. You're like Reddit column 59. Where is the place to go? I want to know where people are hanging out. Where are people hanging out to get information?
It depends on what you want. So
you're lying. You are not wanting to tell us the secret treasure trove place. Like, Phil, if I tell you, it's either going to seem really basic and dumb, or it's just such a secret I can't tell you. It's you'll find out that we'd never landed on the moon or something like that.
So it's generally it's like a combination of a couple AIs. So using ChatGPT, Bing. Because
people do keep their AI. People do keep their AI secret. I have a treasure trove of AI bots and stuff like this that I definitely keep secret. I do think Poe.com is very, very helpful. Have you been to Poe?
I haven't been to Poe.
Yeah, go Pete. And anyone listening to this episode, if you've listened to this episode a lot, please tell us that this stuff is valuable. I want to know. So Poe.com is a treasure trove. It is a treasure trove. You can thank me later. It's literally like everything from your personal psychologist to all different Claude versions to quite a few things. And yes, that's my wife opening a box in the background, everyone. If you can hear boxes opening right now, because she wants the new hip flexor. I don't know, some kind of thing is supposed to fix our hips. And mine's already blown, so I figured I'd use it. But
this is IT Pro TV is a good one for me.
IT Pro TV, that we were going to have them on the show years ago. I forgot all about those guys. They are cool. IT Pro TV is good. They're very good. We need to reach out to them. We're going to give you guys free advertising right now. And yes, we should collaborate. We should collaborate. IT Pro TV is great.
And they're wonderful. You've got virtual machines you can log on to and mess around with, as long as you've got a membership to trainings, to just text-based documents if you're not trying to sit there and watch a video on it. So. And they've got all your CompTIA exams studying there too, with flashcards and things.
Having been like a protein, like, what do you go to school for?
Biological engineering, minored in electrical engineering and math.
Yo, you're such a nerd. It's amazing. My son-in-law is a electrical engineer. Now he works for like ABB, like designing, like, I don't know, circuit board. No, the just massive. Oh gosh, we just blew a fuse. Whatever that thing is in the board in the basement where you flip the little switch and, you know, what's wrong with me? I'm so stupid right now. I have not drank enough coffee today. I'm just not one with the words today. Yeah, they like manufacture those and blow them up in labs and behind big things of glass and everything like that. So this is why you're good at what you do, because you're like a super nerd that went from that to like IT. Is this like a cakewalk compared to that stuff?
I definitely think I have applied knowledge that I can do across. I started off programming in high school because I didn't like doing exams. So I figured out how to make my calculator do them for me.
Oh, good answer.
And then, So from there, in college, just with the EE stuff, I was looking over at circuit boards, microprocessors. So learned assembly languages as part of my degree. And that's kind of what I've been able to apply for. There's, you know, once you get that Boolean logic down, it's like, oh, hey, well, that's how I have to do an if statement. And then from there, you know, it's just picking up new languages and a fine knowledge of how like the different systems can work from there. So that's been, I think, the biggest help for me is that I can shift and apply those through. Even before that, I went to an art magnet school for middle school and high school, did photography, was my focus in tech theater.
Did you say art magnet?
Yeah.
I've never heard those two, like magnet, like polarity, like north-south magnet. Well, I don't even know what that means. What's art magnet school? Again, I'm looking, sounding really stupid today. I couldn't even think of breaker box. I couldn't even think of the breaker box downstairs or upstairs or wherever it is in relation to your house. But please tell me, art magnet school? This just sounds like very special. You are a very special creature. This is great. This is how they make humans. I mean that in a very complimentary way, because I'm crazy and people know that. Go on. I went from art magnet school to managing proteins and like being in electrical engineering to IT director. This is great. Doesn't get any better.
It was a school that's, you're meant to go there, kind of focus on creativity, art, and you still have all your normal coursework. They still let you go over and do additional STEM classes. I took other classes at other schools just because we didn't offer any of the higher level STEM beyond calculus. Yep.
How do they teach? Can you teach? Here's a serious question. Can you teach creativity?
You can foster it.
I like that.
Encourage it.
Foster something in me. Let's practice right now. Will you foster me? Foster my creativity right now.
Foster your creativity?
I ask that just because sometimes, and this is important, this is actually really important thing, because sometimes we really need people to be creative. We really need people to not just like, you are not a robot, answer tickets and fix the computer. We need people to be creative sometimes. We need people to look at the organization. We need them to understand we're using technology as a business force multiplier to make more money, to save money, to cut back on costs, to do all these things that you just did kind of naturally and you've massively downplayed yourself. And I don't think you realize that. Because before I got you on the show, you're like, I don't know, Phil, I'm not really like qualified. I'm like, no, what are you talking about? You're crazy. And I'm already telling, and now that I'm actually talking with you, I'm realizing how much you downplayed yourself. So I don't know who your boss is. And if he ever listens to this show, give him a raise now, because I'm being completely serious, because it's very hard sometimes to get people. Well, first of all, step one is, like you said, be able to use tools that engineers and like sometimes basic human beings need to be able to use. I know like Excel is not just like first name, last name, address, and phone number. Like that's not, you can do so much more in Excel, for example. And some people are like, what's that program you're using? It's called Excel. Yeah. It's called that happens. Like, you know, how did you do that? I built it in PowerPoint. You know what I mean? Like some of these things are like
its whole own thing. There, it's VBA. You can program in that.
So
you can make stuff on top.
Oh, I'm just like, how? And so sometimes things that seem like common sense, and this is why I've been wanting to do a common sense course for a long time. Like, you know, there's like all those things they don't teach you in school growing up, which is probably really great that you went to art magnet school. Is that the name of the school, or is this a category of school? I don't even know what this is, but whatever it is, they did a good job on you, unless you were already naturally creative, but they fostered it. I would love to be able to turn on the creativity engine in people And maybe you have an idea for that. Like, how do you foster? Let's foster.
Let's foster. Well, give a shout out to the school. It was Vancouver School of Arts and Academics, VSAA. So Vancouver, Washington. I guess everyone here now knows where I grew up. But
now we can stereotype you. Oh, you know, you're one of those guys. Anyways, yeah. Skier.
You put Portland stereotype on and you've got a lot of me.
It's like all I can think of is like, I don't know why I think of grunge, just popped to my mind for some reason. This upper left kind of like, you know, I don't know. I just thought of like I don't know, some old.
I'm actually going to a grunge show tomorrow night.
So. Bad, some old bad like MTV videos or something. You know what I mean?
And, oh yeah.
So without stereotyping you and taking you down a notch from where you've already reached so high in the world of IT, how do we foster IT in our team? Because I think it's very important. People need to think creatively. And what's also more ironic is that you're an engineer. So engineers are usually very one-track minded. Like I can fix something. They're not usually able to kind of like step out of the box. A lot of times they get a bad rap as well.
Completely agree. Like I noticed this for my 200 level classes, especially in school where I came in and I had all that like cohort and we're like, oh yeah. And it's, you've got to do A, B, C, D to get your answer. And it's not until you really get to 300-400 where they're like, hey, now go figure out how to do an answer and go along those lines. And that's where I was realizing like, hey, I'm excelling here versus with those classes, I'm mid pack for the 200 and below where I've got to be told exactly this is how you do it. And how can you regurgitate it?
Put those together. So yeah, link those two together somehow.
Link those two together. I'd say the arts programs, especially in just our grade schools, they shouldn't be the first ones to be cut. You know, there's something that we should look at going over and incorporate into normal classes and B, just, you know, keeping in schools. I think something very cool that my school did is we had this whole class that was called core. So in that class, you're supposed to go over and take an actual subject or something going on and then make some art related to it. And, you know, some core projects were very much so like, this is a tree. So I drew a picture of a tree and there's not much meaning of life and whatnot. But there's other ones where it's like you get to really think deep.
Here's some tin cans. Core? Here's some tin cans, some sand and grass and here's some thoughts. Put it together.
Yeah, you know, come up with those metaphorical things. And like, yeah, you got some hanging fruit, like, it's a chair. The chair is representing life and you're getting up through it. Or, you know, it's how you go from being old or young to middle-aged to old, and you're always in that chair, and the chair gets a glimpse of everything that you've done, or there's this, I'm watching a circle, so I'm doing circle. Yeah, you can get interpretive stuff like that, which, you know, on hand, it's, you're just trying to think creative. You're trying to have to make those jumps. You're trying to make those metaphorical leaps.
Yes.
Just kind of training to do those.
It might have come from me from just like, it's like, so I was an English major, so I had to read like a ton of Shakespeare and Chaucer and Old English, and then went to creative writing. And so you have to like analyze all these things. And like, what was Shakespeare really thinking? They're like, no, you're wrong. It was this. You're like, yeah, but I thought that was pretty cool. And so yes. And shout out to David Herring, critical thinking. Because he just likes to use that word critical thinking all the time. I'm like, that has nothing to do with critical thinking. Mr. Herring, we're critical thinking right now. Critical thinking. Everything's critical thinking. Phil, we need to do critical thinking. We're just answering an email. It's not just critical thinking, but Mr. Herring, I miss you. I really do. Yeah. Critical thinking. Okay, so conspiracy section of the show.
Okay.
And you're a nerd. So you're like, I mean that in a very good way. Like, you know math, you know things. Do you look at anything in our world without just taking it for granted, without just taking it as a grain of salt? Like, hey, look, this is always what they've shoved down our throat. This is what they've shown to us on TV. This is real. Do you look at anything and you're like, no way, it's not possible. That's a lie.
Oh,
And I'm speaking specifically about looking out the window at the moon that's 220,000 miles away. And you tell me back in 1969 that we actually flew to the moon and back. And we did that by looking out the window of a little rocket ship after only doing like 9 test flights and knowing the computer systems that we had back then and that we had to use like probably like some kind of makeshift sextant to take a 3-day journey to the moon, land perfectly and come back. Not only that, launch off the moon, walk around on it, bring back rocks in a spaceship that's a different weight now, enter in the atmosphere at over 33,000 feet per second, slow that little tube down, throw out 3 parachutes and land in the ocean.
Yeah.
We did that. Without a thing, like a gun to your head, we did that.
Oh, hell yeah.
okay.
Yeah, not a doubt.
We haven't looked at, I don't think you've looked at all the evidence enough yet. Are you good at rocket science, though? Can we do rocket science? Can we do some rocket science?
I mean, that is real rocket definitely science. Not one that I've taken my physics classes, but it's not something I specialized in. And I will say, I'm a little biased here on your moon one. My grandfather led one of the labs that did hemoglobin research for the astronauts coming back and forth.
Okay.
So he'd tell us about, you know, their quarantine procedures and all the,
yeah, they had to quarantine for like a month or whatever. Who cares about hemoglobin, though? Who cares? So their hemoglobin was what, high, low? I mean, whatever. My hemoglobin could change on anything. I could drink some more water probably and change my hemoglobin.
Well, they're also looking for viruses and, you know, they're looking for things within your body that's telling them to like, hey, you are now infected.
There's life on a, there's life on a, in a sterile environment. We have to quarantine them. Okay. I think that's all part of the lie. That's just me. After I started actually getting into the rocket science and realizing the lift capacity and how much we had to lift, like million, like however many tons we had to lift into the air, it's just insane to me. And I'm still wondering why we have not gone back. We should have like a whole colony of like little things on the moon right now, sheds and all kind of people walking around. I'm like, hey, we're just doing it because we can, because we're America and, you know, like whatever. Like, how have we never gone back? About how America's, we lost all the information? Looking, huh?
Oh, America's looking at putting a train on the moon.
Do it. I've seen the air train thing. Yes, we're going to have this crazy air train that's going to shoot out into space and go to the moon and back. Bring it. I'm ready. Like, I'll be on that train. Put me on the train, then it'll blow up. And they're like, see, we screwed up. And Phil's dead. Phil's dead. Try again. I'm ready. I'm ready to see people walking around on the moon. I'm just putting it out there. I just want people to question it. There's a lot of books out there on the actual rocket science and lift capacities. When you look at the actual numbers, it's mind-blowing. 33,000 feet per second. Do you have any idea how fast that is? I mean, I know you do, but it's like however many football fields, like literally per second. It's insane. That's how fast that little triangular re-entry thing came in. Not to mention the, who cares about the burn off speed and all that other stuff. It's just, it's insane. It's insane math. So
Tyler, I think everything you look at can be kind of mental till you really start to dive in and you kind of talk to the experts and you get there with it, that it's hard to.
I'm
your head.
That's why I'm asking you, experts, anything else? Is there anything in this environment, any conspiracy theories that you subscribe to, or are we just, everyone's super smart and these other guys are just a bunch of idiots?
Yeah. Don't really have any.
Crackpots, idiots.
I was listening to this thing the other day and I forgot the term of it, but there's that psychological effect where you dumb something down so much that you lose how it initially actually happened and you become wrong because you've had to oversimplify it. Their example was like how we tell little kids that, hey, rainbows are photons reflecting off of raindrops. And it's like, well, no, then it's how those photons, their energy length gets changed when they pass through that. And that energy length, when it hits your eye, then has a different.
Right. And they're like, have you ever seen a prism? You know?
Yeah.
It's like a prism, like a triangle thing, and light comes through, and okay.
So it gets into like that energy exchange there. But it's like you can't go over and tell a little kid that, hey, so there's all these particles running around with energy in them and getting it on. It's like, no, we're just
going to. I was a science kid growing up. I mean, I took physics. I loved physics. I loved inorganic chemistry. I just, whatever, valence electrons and all this stuff. And now I think in my old age, I'm just getting very skeptical of all this. Remember the valence electron mass? I'm assuming you did inorganic chemistry. You have to. You're a protein dude. I just remember doing these.
It's a tree.
Oh, just the valence electron math and all these like balancing of, I don't know. It's just wild. So you're an organic, but you took organic chemistry.
So I All I had to go up chemistry. I didn't have to do organic. I just had to get through the normal chem. Then we got into chemical engineering. So we're looking at a bunch of transport classes. I think the best way to summarize my degree is like we focused in on being able to build human technology interfaces, building prosthetics, and then looking at artificial. So I had a lot of biology classes I had to take.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day. You got any crazy memory techniques?
Acronym done in the library for 14 hours at a time and hate yourself.
Yes. Props to you. Mad props guy for doing all that memorization.
I am very dyslexic, so memorization was always one that was like, I can try, but I'll screw up an acronym if I do it.
So, well, actually, you might, if you're crazy dyslexic, I would think memory would help then, no? Versus writing things down, you'd have to memorize it.
So I don't know. No. It helps. Something I think is that I've seen some stuff on it, is I'll think about things differently, more in a three-dimensional space instead of a two-dimensional space. So that can help. And I've heard that's sort of why people swap stuff around. But it's like, if you're looking at letters, or if I'm trying to write down an acronym, I need a couple. I can remember several, and I can remember like groups of things.
What's this three-dimensional space thing? What's this? What are you talking about? What is this? With the amount of people that have dementia nowadays, and like, I really want to strengthen my memory. I would love to turn the key and figure out the key to memory.
If you do that, I mean, you'll be a millionaire.
Well, you know, I would love to figure out, like, if some people have photogenic memory, like, can I turn mine on? Is there a way to do that? Like, can I figure that out? I would love to have that. You know what I mean? Like, how do they do that? Like, and so I'm like really into following all these like memory guys on YouTube and stuff, and memory palaces and acronyms and different ways of memorizing things. And it just always seems to come back to, no, repeat it 5,000 times and it'll stick.
Yeah, that works, because you're building up your neural pathway of like, hey, when you have that electrical impulse, it's going to flow that way.
Or have it happen in conjunction with an event. You know what I mean? It's like learning a language. You know, you want to learn a language in like, it's always better when you're there in the environment, in the country, practicing it with people. There's a person, you remembered that word because this thing happened, because you were locked up in jail and they said this word. And then you're like, oh, I'll never forget that word now because I was locked up in jail. So anyways.
I might say, like, how I view stuff and how is kind of, it's a, you can interchange things, they flip around, you can kind of interact and look at it on a sort of 3D where you're looking in instead of just having that direct up and down. Like, I've noticed that especially has been useful. So I'll do design things when we need a part specially made for the line. I can go over and jump on some 3D software, make some, then go over and we can get it 3D printed out for them.
Okay. That's a valuable IT guy. That's crazy. Keep going.
But I've noticed that that's just something new. So, like, letters that share a lot of shapes, I have a lot of issues with. So, like, if I have to write down an A or a B or a D, you'll mm-hmm. see me under the table doing this. Because if you go left to right, it's A, B, C, D. And I know it's reversed on the cam right now, but I'm making a thumbs up and facing it towards me. That makes the shape of a B. Other one makes the shape of a D. Just doing stuff like that is how, you know, keep stuff straight. P and Q, those ones are rough, 9 and 6. I had exams in school where I went back through and was like, I flopped my 9 and my 6 there. Like, my math is all right and everything there is correct. And like, a professor would be like, yeah, you did it all right, but I had to dock you like 2 points because you messed that part up.
Right, come on. I'd be like, come on, guy. You can see I'm dyslexic. A computer program in the future would fix that. Give me an... wow. Okay.
Wow.
But that would help regardless of whether you're dyslexic or not. Imagining things, putting yourself in situations like that, getting under the desk and yes.
I'm 3D printing, I think, is something you can do it for hobbies, blow off steam. I mean, I print stuff off all the time. I'll play Warhammer with a couple of friends, D&D to print models for my group, paint them. It's great for just blowing steam off. And relaxing. But then you can also go in and you can build stuff. I mean, there's like my headphone holder over there, and that's all 3D printed, just design I made one day when I'm like, I'm tired of putting these on my desk. I'm knocking them over. I don't want to go spend $20 on something to hold it. So I'll make a thing that I can run a wire through and set it there.
Yes. I think my son-in-law, you would get along well because he's got he probably has more than one 3D printer now. And I remember the first one that he bought on like Facebook Marketplace or something. I was like, hey, check out what I made for my coffee machine, because I think he needed to make, I don't know, it's like something that you like poke out the like espresso like cubes with or something to clean out something. But he's just like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to 3D print this. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But yes, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I don't know how much we've, here's my summary. We need to somehow, you've creativity and engineering side by side is important. Do you have any advice for people out there in similar roles, IT roles? Is there, because it sounds like people just trust you. It sounds like, look, yeah. we just need this to be fixed. Can you figure it out? And you're like, yeah, I got it. Don't worry. We'll 3D print something. We'll get creative. And with engineering, anything can happen. So the answer is be creative, have an advanced engineering background. And but in all seriousness, what any advice to provide to listeners out there? Things that have been like tricks of the trade, made your life easier. I don't know, talking with people. We haven't really talked about that, but is there anything?
I would highly recommend finding someone that you know you can call and be like, hey, I need some help with this. And they'll at least be able to give you a direction to go into. Kind of learning where your resources are that are reliable resources to go with and figuring out your learning method. For me, it's I've got to break stuff. So I've got, you know, for every server that I've built for my company, I've got a second one that's on a backup somewhere else that I can access. So, you know, before I do an update or before I'm even trying to like get a server and figure out like how to set up domains or something, I can go and mess around with it on there. So I'm not bringing other things down. So figuring out how to do that. And when you have an idea, just in general, you know, write it down, start playing around with it, figure out how to model it. You don't need to go out and spend if you're going to NASA, it's like they didn't start with their building the rocket ships and spending millions to do it. It's like they started with wood models and mockups trying to figure out things.
Suicide Squad. That was the name of it. Suicide Squad. They're like the rocket guys. They're like one of those groups that were building rockets were called the Suicide Squad because people thought they're going to kill themselves because they're always like blowing up rockets and stuff like that. And explosions were happening out in California or whatever. That's the real name. You can look it up. I think that's great advice. And it's advice that seems, again, like common sense, but not necessarily, because a lot of people, one of their problems they say in IT is it gets very lonely at the top. Like I don't have anyone in my department that's like on my level to bounce ideas off of or anything. And if I did, it would be like the CEO, and then he'd be questioning me like, are you sure you know what you're doing? Like that type of thing. So having a peer group or having like a good mentor to call, and then a test lab to blow things up in.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a mentor. It can be, as you said, peer group, guys you go get beers with, and you sit down and play some board games. They've got a base knowledge of IT. You can expand what you know. We'll expand what they know. Like, it's a good group. You can help kind of lift each other up and share knowledge.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Yes, sir.